Well, 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 Hobbo. Happy New Year 2017.
Indeed. To all our listeners out there, sponsors, friends, family, and everybody else,
anybody wandering around in a car looking for something fun to listen to.
That's right. Absolutely. If you're not watching the Rose Bowl, and it's 13-0 Trojans, so you might as well listen to us.
Yeah.
But, Happy New Year. It would have been a little happier had Bacon hit the rim and not hit the net on that last shot.
Yeah, I thought Kyle Guy was going to be our hero.
Would have been a nice W to get, even though, as Coach Bennett said in the postgame, Virginia, it would have been stealing one because they made some critical mistakes coming down the stretch. But Cal Guy tried to bail them out, but then got to tip your hat to Florida State. They made the immediate inbounds pass to Bacon, and he never gave it up. And Virginia was sort of scrambling on defense. Isaiah Wilkins tried to get a hand up, but too much bacon. You know, my doctor for years has been saying that too much bacon is not good for your health. And I left there. I had a stomach upset. Maybe, I was depressed. Maybe, everything else.
Maybe too many biscuits.
Never enough.
Maybe cut back on that 4-egg omelet. All right. Let's talk about who's on the show tonight, Hobbo.
Brad Soderberg, the assistant coach at Virginia, will be on momentarily. We're going to reach out to him, and friend of the program and sponsor as well, Vern Inge. I think we're going to talk to Vern a little bit about some of the business aspects of sports, including our friends down at North Carolina that keep pushing off the NCAA investigation.
Three key topics. Obviously, the latest update on the Carolina investigation. This is only the third notice of allegations. How many notices do they get?
Three notices over, 15 years? How long have they stretched this out?
If you could probably extend this thing into the next century. We also will talk about the players that have declared for the draft in the ACC and those that have not declared. And we'll also talk about the Wake Forest situation and the color commentator for the radio program who basically was a traitor. And Louisville and Virginia Tech both took advantage of that inside pregame planning and so forth.
A little $25,000 slap on the wrist. Yeah. In a multi-million-dollar athletic budget, a $25,000 fine is
sort of like a quarter.
It's like getting a parking ticket downtown for $5, But at any rate, I think we got Coach on the line. Coach Soderberg in his second year at the University of Virginia on Tony Bennett's bench. He's been a head coach at St. Louis, and I think he was on the Wisconsin bench for a while as well, which is probably where he got to know the Bennetts. Coach, to refresh our memory. I know you've had a long relationship with the Bennett family. Bring us up to date on that again.
I do have a long history with the Bennetts. In fact, my first coaching stint was with Tony's dad at Wisconsin, as you mentioned, from 1995 to 2001. But even before that, when I was a college basketball player at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, Dick Bennett was my coach. And just have got fond memories of that and obviously tremendous respect for the Bennett family. I think they've done tremendously well in all the stops they've made as a father-son combo.
Well, we're happy you're on the bench in Charlottesville, and obviously the Wahoo Nation is happy that Tony Bennett's on the bench in Charlottesville. Let's take care of the bad news first. I'm sure you've looked at the film of the last 8 seconds of the game on Saturday. What did you see?
You might be surprised. That wasn't the focus of our attention. We certainly have to give credit where credit is due. Bacon is, a guy we're going to see in the NBA in the near future, and he made an NBA play right at the end. Maybe we could have picked him up a few steps earlier, but I don't think that anyone is really to fault for the shot that he made. But we did identify a number of unforced errors that we made during the course of the game, and anyone that was at the game could see him as plain as day. We just did some things that are a little uncharacteristic of our team, and as we've preached to our guys from the beginning, we have a very narrow margin for error. We don't have on our roster a guy that can go over to 35 any given night and pull out a win for us all by himself. So we have to, dot every I and cross every T as far as blocking out all the time and handling the basketball well and knowing our assignments regarding the scout and all those types of things. And we felt we made a few unforced errors on Saturday, and that's how it goes sometimes. And unfortunately, losing games at home in conference play is not a great formula. So we'll have to overcome it and get right back to work on Wednesday at Pittsburgh.
Well, Coach, interesting thoughts there. This is Frank, and again, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, Virginia started so strongly and sustained it for about 30 minutes against Louisville and really owned Louisville in that game until the final minutes, where apparently everybody forgot that there was a shot clock and you had to take a shot at some point. But other than that, do you think there was some carryover from the end of that game into the beginning of the Florida State game? Because Virginia seemed a little out of sorts, and I couldn't really put my finger on it, but I didn't feel very comfortable either.
No, I think that's a good observation. We addressed with our team after the Louisville game, in fact, immediately after the game, that despite the fact that, you know, we beat a top 10 team on the road for the first time in however many years, that's not the issue. You know, Tony does a great job of consistently talking about quality of play, regardless of whether you're in a 20-point win or a 20-point loss. And we felt in the last 7 minutes of the Louisville game, our quality was poor. Now, granted, we had a lead, and sometimes, you know, guys lose their attention to detail when you've got a pretty substantial lead. But again, that's regardless of the point. We thought our quality was poor in the last 7 minutes. And then on Saturday, there may have been some of that from a ball handling standpoint. I thought we were lax with the ball in the last 7 minutes at Louisville and not very good for the most part of the game against Florida State regarding ball handling. On the other side, I thought our defense was very good against Florida State. Mm-hmm. I mean, we made it miserable for them to get good shots, as they did to us. And it was those, you know, those turnovers and unforced errors that really caught us in the end.
We're visiting with Virginia assistant coach Brad Soderberg. Brad, you know, the one thing that sticks out from the stat sheet, Florida State shot 24 free throws and Virginia shot 5. Now, I realize minus Austin Nichols, you know, we don't have quite the interior game that we would like to have. But what can you do to try to address the discrepancy of free throws like that? That's tough to overcome.
You're not kidding. That is an issue that we talked about during our staff meeting today, as a matter of fact. And there's no really good answer for that. When you take guys like Anthony Gill and Malcolm Brogdon out of your lineup, both of whom were in attack mode, that's the best way I can put it, more so than the guys that we have on the floor now, it's difficult to create foul situations. We're a little bit more of an east-to-west team this year, which isn't a bad thing, but fouling and getting to the free throw line is a huge part of offensive efficiency in basketball. Florida State, on the other hand, they are a take-it-to-the-rim kind of team, and it doesn't take a genius to figure out if teams are taking it to the rim, there's more chance that officials are going to make calls, and if you play more east-to-west, there's less chance they're going to make calls. So I don't think it was a terrible whistle that was the result of that discrepancy. I think it was styles of play. And as I said earlier in my comments, our margin of error is small, and that partly factors in what I just said about the foul difference. We know that we're not a, you know, drive it to the rim kind of team. We rely more on execution and great screening and so on. Well, with that being said, you have to do all the other things at a very high level, and we just didn't do that on Saturday.
Yeah, particularly execution at the end of the game. You know, Virginia was up 2 at the last dead ball timeout. Jack Salt shooting the front end of the 1-1. He misses it. Didn't block out on a free throw where Bacon tried to help us out by missing 2 free throws and let him get the rebound back and knock down a jump shot and kind of a careless inbounds play. You know, those type of things. In ACC games, I mean, the game on Saturday is going to look similar to a lot more games as the season unfolds. So you got to rectify some of those critical mistakes.
Absolutely, that you could have been on the coaching staff today because that was the theme. But to the guys' credit, we made a bunch of really good plays offensively down the stretch. I mean, Isaiah hit a big 3. Devin Hall got to the lane, made 2 free throws, and then of course Kyle hit that big shot with 8 seconds to go. So, you know, we would be talking more about those had Bacon missed the last shot, but that's just the nature of sport. Because he made that last shot, now we're talking more about, you know, the things that went wrong.
Yeah, I don't know how you looked at it, but when Isaiah took that three, I was looking down, and my initial reaction was, oh, you know, I'm not sure that was the number one option for Isaiah to be out there shooting threes, but when he knocks it down, you're thinking, man, what a nice shot that was.
Yeah, it absolutely wasn't the first option, but, you know, when you're, I think we were down five at the time or whatever, you can't be too picky on which shots you do take, and we do have to give credit to Florida State, though. What a tremendous defensive team. They put pressure on us the entire game. You know, they're not whatever they are now, 13-1 or 14-1 for no reason. And as you said so well, welcome to the ACC. I mean, you just when you start licking your wounds too long, then you're going to get knocked down again. So I think we did a good job today of addressing the issues that we had on Saturday and kind of dusting ourselves off, had a good practice today, and look forward to going to Pittsburgh tomorrow night and then playing them on Wednesday.
Coach, a question I have for you. At times, I know Tony has been trying to work London Prentice over to the two so that he can get some more shots off the ball and so forth. However, it is my opinion that Virginia's rhythm and tempo is hindered greatly when that happens. Both Devin Hall and Darius Thompson and everyone else that handles the ball, they tend to back up whenever any time a defender jumps all over them instead of holding their ground and running the offense closer to the top of the key the way London's able to do it. Has thought been given to just keeping London at the top of the key and running the team the way he always has?
Well, I beg to differ on the idea that we're trying to find a way to move London over to the two at times, because that, as far as I know, and I've attended all the staff meetings, that's not the case. There will be times when, you know, as you may know, we have London take the ball out against the press, mm-hmm. and because he's such a good passer, we feel like, you know, most of the time that pass is going to be completed. And then there are times when the opponent, once they see that, they'll deny London the ball back. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes forces us to have someone else bring the ball up the court. You're right in that we would like to have London take more shots than he did a year ago, because we think, one, we need the offensive production, and two, he's a very fine shooter from the mm-hmm. perimeter.
Yes.
But we, you know, I know for a fact that we would prefer to have London, the ball in London's hands, you know, almost all the time. I think if Ty Jerome comes in and plays with London, we feel comfortable with either guy. But normally, no, we want London to have the ball in his hands whenever possible. He's played nearly 100 games in a Cavalier uniform now, maybe more than that now that we're this far into the season. And he has seen everything and been through everything, so we definitely want him to have the ball more than anyone else.
You know, I think I saw a stat where London's started 133 games or something crazy like that.
Wow, yeah, and that's more than I was way off.
And he has 499 assists. How about that, Hobbo?
That's about 498 more than I had.
one comment I love to make about London, because I'm the new guy on the block here with this staff, but I this is my 31st year as a college basketball coach, and I've never been around a guy that's got such a tremendous IQ for the game and then shows it in huddles. I have been amazed by the communication between Tony and London in huddles with the rest of the team right around us. I mean, I feel like, you know, London should be the assistant coach ahead of all the rest of us. What a great mind for the game, just a very cerebral player. And I hate to think about what it'll be like without him a year from now. But I'm so happy that he's been as successful as he has been, and he deserves a lot of credit for all the wins that UVA has enjoyed over the last 3.5 years.
Certainly a fine young man with a very unusual hairstyle. Down at ACC Operation Basketball, he was voted by all the other ACC players that were down there as having the best hair.
And no question.
And well, I'm kind of wondering what they're looking at. But Kyle Guy is trying to overtake him with that man bun thing or whatever they call it.
As long as he keeps making buckets, he can have a man bun.
I think Kyle Guy's his hair might be like Samson in the Bible. Yeah. You know, he's got to keep the hair.
But just better leave that alone.
Mm. Speaking of Kyle Guy, we're going to carry you through the break if that's all right, Coach.
Sure.
Talk to me a little bit about his defensive progress. Obviously, he's an offensive weapon, and from my perspective, I'd like to see him on the floor more, and I'm sure that depends on defense. Where is he defensively?
You know, he has one defensive problem, and that is he's 160 pounds. it's not, or 165, whatever. The point is, it's not a lack of effort or a lack of understanding of where he's supposed to be regarding various schemes that we run and techniques that we use. He's very alert, very intelligent, very quick, plays hard. He's just 160 pounds, and, you know, almost every night the guy next to him is, you know, 30 pounds heavier. And that will be the case on Wednesday when we play at Pittsburgh. So I guess right now it's more in the hands of our strength conditioning guy and our nutrition guy to try to bulk him up as much as we can. But I think fans can see what we saw in him when we watched him during his high school years. Just has a tremendous knack for putting the ball in the basket and is literally fearless regarding whenever what the situation is in the game. He'll shoot it when it's, like we saw Saturday, when it's a game winner, or when, you know, like he hit some big shots at Cal for us.
Oh, he sure did.
He doesn't care. He's just wired to score.
He reminds a lot of people of that Hopgood kid that played a number of years ago, you know?
Not really. Coach, we have got to go to break. Please stay with us. We're going to carry you over to the other side. And a little bit more time with Coach Soderberg. Stay with us. This is Who's Talking.